Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Thomas Senna, co-host of the SNL Hall of Fame podcast.
And I'm Jeremy Dove, co-host of the Bigger Than the Game podcast.
Jeremy and I have joined forces to create a new podcast called Pop Culture 5 to ask the question, what are the five essential things about any given pop culture topic?
It could be five essential movies by an actor of our choice.
Or five essential songs by a musician of our choice.
We're not making a list of our personal favorites, it's the essentials.
And we better do a good job of justifying our essentials, because one of us will have veto power each episode.
And I'm ready to tell Thomas why he's wrong.
All right, Jeremy, all right. Well, actually, why don't we give everyone an out-of-context peek at what we've been up to? So Pharrell was right next to me, and we looked at each other, and we were kind of like bobbing our heads. He wasn't wearing his hat. Nobody really knew he was kind of wearing. He was kind of incognito. But I had to do a double take. I'm like, that's Pharrell. And then he looked at me.
You just slipped that in there, this big name drop here. I was next to my man Pharrell. Like, I never heard this, everyone.
So join us to celebrate and discuss the essentials of pop culture.
Listen and subscribe to Pop Culture 5 wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, it's time to gather around the water cooler to talk the SNL Hall of Fame. Hey, it's JD here, and welcome back to the SNL Hall of Fame Water Cooler podcast. It is a thrill to be back for season two with my friends Joe and Shari. I'm going to head down to the lunchroom right now and get reacquainted with the two of them. Well, there's Joe eating a PB&J sandwich. Take your last swallow, Joe. Maybe a little swig of water from the water cooler. How's it going, my friend?
Aaron Burr. No, it's great to be back.
Shari, how are you doing this 2025?
I'm getting my water bottle. It's all filled up from the water cooler. I am so excited to be back. I really missed you two and our discussions.
Me too. Well, shall we get right into it?
Let's do it.
Yes.
All right. This week's episode on Monday aired, and it featured Brad Robinson nominating Chevy Chase. Shari, do you want to recap Monday's SNL Hall of Fame episode?
Oh, it was a goodie. First, I want to welcome Bill Kenny, our new host. We miss Thomas. And as Bill always says, his shoes are hard to fill, but Bill got off to a banging start with Brad Robinson, whose podcast with Gary C is the Not Ready for Primetime Project, which thanks JD and several others for getting me hooked on it. It's a terrific vintage podcast that goes all the way back. And I started at the beginning. So I learned a lot about Chevy Chase because they got through it all, from his sketches to his many things that he was set the template for, all of the writing that he did. Of course, huge discussion about Weekend Update, Land Shark, the cold opens with the famous pratfalls, and so much more. I don't want to give away too much in case you haven't listened to it yet, but it is a great one. And they really break down Chevy's importance. Brad talks a lot about how he was converted after rewatching season one and then the first six episodes of season two. He wasn't a huge Chevy fan. He's a very big Belushi fan. But has he watched and has he discussed things with Gary, he realized how crucial Chevy was to the beginnings of the show, and how if it wasn't for Chevy, SNL might have never made it to his second season. So a really fantastic way to start off the seventh season, the final season, with a bang.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting too, the reemergence of Chevy in his life, in Brad's life, you know, falling not in love with him, but you know, realizing the importance of Chevy to the show. I thought that was the most fascinating part for me. Joe, what did you think?
They tackled everything. Because here's the thing is Chevy was only there for about a year, year and a half. He was very important, but it's like, you know, there's only so much you could, you know, talk about. I mean, there's a lot in a short period of time. So he's not like a cast member who was there 9 years, had various different characters with various different hosts and all this stuff. But it's like, no, he was only there a year and a half, did a lot of important things in the formation of the show, and then left. And then I just want to mention, you know, and then it's, I think, rather important to mention, we're talking about him as a cast member, not a host, which is probably why we're going to be saying a lot of good things about him, because I feel like all the best stuff you could say about Chevy Chase in regards to Saturday Night Live is all the best stuff was when he was a cast member, not a host. So we're going to be talking about all the great stuff, you know, he did. So obviously it's going to be during that first year and a half. But yeah, they tackled it. They tackled all the bullet points, everything he did. And, you know, I'm sure we'll cover it. But yeah, everything from Landshark Weekend Update and so forth. So, yeah, they did a great job, and I really feel like it's important to remember that he was a great cast member because of all the stuff that happened afterward. So it's like, let's not forget what he did, you know? Like, there's a reason why he's such a great name when it comes to Saturday Night Live. So, I'm sure we'll talk about that right now.
Sure, yeah. Well, let's get into it. Looking at the list of first year SNL not ready for primetime players that are in the Hall of Fame, are there any that have a path that's similar? I mean, he's got such a unique story because he's only got the year and six episodes. So it's like, I don't know where you begin to parse this. Shari, where do you begin and end with this?
That is an excellent question. I was taking my notes and thinking about that because there isn't anybody who quite compares to him. The closest you can get is the original cast members that are already in, but they've had at least 4 years, most of them five, as compared to his 1.5. So I guess the closest get is Bill Murray because he was only on 4. But I mean, even he has 2.5, 3 more years. So it's kind of hard. Sort of hard to find anybody whose trajectory was exactly like his.
Yeah. Like maybe, I mean, gosh. Yeah, there's nobody else that's got, you know, I'm thinking Christopher Guest, Martin Short, Billy Crystal, you know, but they don't quite meet the guidelines because they only have the one season. But that's a great caliber as well. I guess, you know, the fact that he ended up just being the star of the show for that year, that's something that's very unique as well. Joe, what do you think?
I picked 2 because it's almost like the Venn diagram between these two people is Chevy Chase. And that the two people I picked were Lorne and Jim Downey. And the reason I picked those two is Lorne helped create the show, similar to how Chevy did. And Jim Downey was like one of the first writers and, you know, writer performers, you know, because I know like the cast members also did write, but Jim Downey was more of a writer performer. So it's kind of like in that Venn diagram of like who, you know, like helped create the show, was a writer performer. And, you know, so it's like Chevy falls right in there. So Chevy could have been just this writer. you know, and just wrote, or he could have just been like another cast member, like Dan Aykroyd or Gilden Radner, where he just, you know, did his, you know, cast duties. But instead, he did both. He helped create the show, form it. I mean, the stuff with the cold. I mean, I kind of the cold open fall, which, you know, I'm not sure if a cold open would have stayed if it wasn't for Chevy. I don't know. That's for another day. But also, Weekend Update, which still to this day is kind of like a reincarnation or a of what Chevy did in that first year. I mean, even though people did it in their style, when you could watch that first year of Weekend Update and you watch something from this year with Colin and Che, it's still like that same form of having the picture of the president, whoever it may be, or whoever you're talking about, and doing the setup, you know, punchline. I mean, that was Chevy.
I think you hit a lot of great points there, Joe. And what I want to do right now is slide on over to the closing argument. I will play that for you now.
So, final case for Chevy Chase, Brad. What do you want to say to the listeners and the people who are voting for the SNL Hall of Fame?
I'm going to say open up your minds and don't try to sit there and pick out characters and impressions and make a count of a numbers, because you're not going to do it. He was only on the show for less than a season and a half. It's intangibles. It's what he meant to the show. You know, he was the breakout star of season one. His rise was faster than anybody in the history of the show. We can't say enough his importance. Like if Chevy Chase was not on SNL, there may not be an SNL after season one. He was instrumental in huge things, political and impressions. You know, he did the Gerald Ford impression. He helped set the tone for political satire and what they could do with politics on the show. Along those lines, Weekend Update. He set the standard of Weekend Update. He created the template of what a Weekend Update anchor does. And last, you know, this one might be a stretch, but characters, you know, Landshark, he had one of the first recurring characters in the history of the show. It's one of the most iconic ones. So, you know, those three things, Update, politics, Landshark. I think you combine those with just the overall importance of what he meant to the show and how vital he was. And I ignore all the stuff after the fact, and it's a slam dunk.
Shari, what do you think of Brad's final take?
I think Brad is one of the most eloquent voices in SNL podcasting. You're in there too, JD. But I mean, Brad just was so succinct, and so he's so knowledgeable about the beginnings of the show. And I love that he opened his own mind, because he's not a Chevy fan. And he really opened his own mind to how much Chevy did for the show and how he really kept the show going. I mean, I do agree that he probably is the reason that show made it to season two. People were in love with Chevy. They just fell in love with him. I was never a huge fan. I was kind of where Brad is. But after the listening I've been doing and the watching of the old apps, I've been doing a lot of that. He was a magnetic, as Joe said, a magnetic, and Brad and Bill. He was just a magnetic presence that sort of pulled everyone into his orbit. And I mean, he kept doing that all through the 80s, right? And with his career after the show. So I know that after the show doesn't matter, but he had a huge impact on pulp culture for at least 25, 30 years. And even in the, I know he was controversial on Community, but he was there. And to keep going, it just says a lot. So I've kind of become a convert. I think he was really intrinsic to the show's beginnings. And I think he was almost as important as Lorne or Michael O'Donohue or any of the early founders of the show. So that's my two cents. Totally agree with Brad and couldn't have said it better.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Let's talk about the movie Saturday Night. I had tickets to go to the premiere, and I totally had a panic attack and could not go. So I waited. Then I went to rent it, and it was $24 to rent because it was still in the theater. And then I rented it finally, and it was $6 or $5, whatever it was. I don't know. And then 2 days after I rented it and watched it, it came on Netflix. So I really enjoyed it. It felt brief. Felt too brief. If I were doing it again, based on the cast that he put together and the time that they put into getting that cast and crew together, I would have liked it to have been like a 6-episode series, you know, doing the same thing. It could do the same thing, but it didn't need to be, you know, on the nose with the 90-minute thing. That's just my take. It was a little too chaotic. Joe, what did you think?
Now, to piggyback off what you're saying, because I 100% agree, and everyone I talk to has a similar opinion, but I think everyone takes away from it is a less is more type thing, everyone is so good that it left you wanting more. Like when he says, spoilers, I mean, when he says live from New York, spoilers, they get the show off the ground. But you're like, you go kind of like have whiplash where you're like, yeah, let's do this. It's over. You know, like, and you see the cast pictures, like the roll call, and you're like, I want to see them redo the the recreations and stuff like that. Or you still want to see, like, maybe it continues on, like, the first 5 years with Chevy not getting along and leaving and John and Bill, you know, and Chevy and Bill getting in that fight. You want to see the other stuff, but you have to realize the whole premise of the movie is putting together that first episode, and Jason Reitman said it takes place in the last 90 minutes. So you kind of like know that going in, like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. The last 90 minutes before the first episode, and you see it play off, air quotes, in real time, you know, kind of for the most part, they fudge it, but whatever, it's a movie, but it still feels like it, you know, it is in real time. You know, you see them going around from office to office, from the office to the set and stuff like this. And you feel like you're really there. And then, you know, once the show gets started and you hear Live from New York, the way that you get excited for that for any episode when you hear Live from New York, you're like, yeah, let's do this. But in this case, it's backwards, where the thing that gets you pumped up and jacked for Saturday Night Live is the ending. It's literally the last line in the movie. So I feel like everyone, you know, gets on board. Like, these, you know, actors are great. The guy that played Chevy is great, which goes great with our episode. And I'm disappointed there was zero Oscar noms. I mean, but anyway, that's okay. Another podcast. But the point is, you get all jacked. You're like, these recreations are good. The actors are good. And you're like, I'm in this moment. I'm, you know, everything's going. And then Live from New York, it's, you know, Saturday night, and it's over. So it's like this thing where you get jacked. It's only 90 minutes. It's a less is more, and then that's why I think people want more, is because it was that good in a small amount of time.
I couldn't agree with you more. It was, yeah.
All right, let's go.
Just a bit too frenetic for me. That's all. That's my only complaint. Mm-hmm. Shari, where do you land?
Oh, I was like you, JD, as far as getting the movie. I was all set to go see it, and then I got a really bad cold, and I just didn't get around to it. And then it was $24 to rent. And then I rented it. And I think it was on Netflix maybe a week or two later. But yeah, we watched it New Year's. It was our New Year's Eve movie, because we always watch a movie and eat appetizers. So we watched it and ate our appetizers. And I feel like that's kind of a perfect word for the movie. It was sort of an appetizer. Like, I totally agree with both of you. Mm. I wanted more. I wanted to see more of the cast developing. I want to see them go into different casts. And I want to see, you know, that season 11. By the way, if you have not watched Everything I Need to Know About SNL on the Saturday Night Network, I am giving John and crew a shameless plug. Watch the season 11 episode. It was one of those episodes, and there's a whole documentary on Peacock now about season 11. Boy, would I love to see that season, among others, on the big screen. But for what it was, that all being said, for what it was, I really thought it was fantastic. I think Garrett got more time in this movie than he did in all 5 seasons of SNL. I feel like Garrett was focused on more than almost any other, beside Lorne. You got a lot of Garrett. And
You and really did. Nothing of Lorraine. Nothing. Like very little Lorraine.
Not a lot of Gilda. Not a ton of Dan. I think like the one you got the most like to know was Garrett. And Lamorne Morris, who plays him, was absolutely fantastic. And I mean, you can't get a bigger compliment than when the actor themselves says he nailed it. And Garrett has gone on record saying, this kid, it was like looking at a mirror. He's like, this kid got it just perfect. So I was really happy we got the Garrett. I feel like he gets short shrift, as we've already discussed on this podcast. So to see what he went through as an older man, as a non-white, one of the only, and like to see how he got along so well with everybody and got people to kind of let down their walls, kind of people opened up to him. Yeah. And I believe that Garrett was really like that. From everything I've seen, he's like one of the nicest cast members of all time. Like he'll talk to anybody. So I love that. So that part was probably my favorite part, is getting to that little window. But we didn't get enough time to get more windows. I wanted more windows. So yeah, I totally agree with you too.
Yeah, I wanted everybody to have a story, because like Belushi had a story, and
Chevy.
Oh my gosh. And no, I was going, who were we just talking about? Oh my goodness. Garrett and John are the only two that have like an arc.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
And he's sort of like, is John going to sign the contract? I don't know. And then he signs the contract. And that's the, you know, beginning, middle, and end.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Everyone else, you just kind of like saw the back of their baseball card type thing. You kind of saw their backstory. Like, you know, there was that scene where Garrett and Jane are sitting up in the stands and they're talking about their history that led up to the show. And, you know, what's, you know, they're trying to figure out how they're going to fit in and stuff like that. But that's like the setup. You need the payoff, you know, and, you know, you don't. Yeah, I agree. You don't really get that with every. Maybe it would have been too complicated and too, you know, all over the place. But. Yeah, it would have been nice to have more payoffs with the cast members, you know.
Yeah. That's why I think, like, a 6-episode HBO, you know, high-end series that covers, make it cover 20 years if you want. But it doesn't, you know, it could be just that first day again, right? Or the lead-up to the first day. I would like to see all that.
Or maybe an important important show in the season, you know, doesn't have to be the season premiere. It could be like, oh my God, Bill Murray's coming back, you know, or, you know, like that one in 1980 where it was Joe Piscopo, Eddie Murphy, and it was the last one before the writer's strike. And, you know, and it's Bill, you know, something like that leading up to the Bill Murray show. Like maybe you do the whole week. It doesn't have to be the 90 minutes up, and you could, you know, have Bill Murray, like giving him a legit sketch about it, the cold open about it, where he was giving a pep talk to the cast members, but maybe like there was something that really did happen. And I agree with Shari, that season 11, I mean, Everything You Need to Know and the Peacock documentary. And then the other one I want to throw in there.
Peacock documentary so badly. I hate that we get screwed out of Peacock.
And there's another one coming up that I guarantee you is going to be come and go, which is the music one. And it's going to come and go because of the music rights. But I think it's an absolute great idea for a documentary that is like the music. Yeah, do you want a documentary about the Saturday Night Live musical guest? I mean, that's an important part of the show. And
preaching, you know, to the choir, son.
I know you are. I knew it. I was trying. I was like, I felt like I was driving past the store. I wasn't sure if I should go in. But you did. You did, you know, win me over with that last year with everything. And yeah. So, yeah, I mean. Yeah, so I know I'm preaching to the choir. I admit it, you know, and I'm the converted, whatever, preaching to the converted. I don't know what the idiom is, but either way. But another I think deserves a documentary or something, or maybe a biopic or whatever, is season 20. And they just did I was looking forward to this because they did a big gap, or Everything You Need to Know just did their Everything You Need to Know about season 20, and they did like 19, and I thought, like, oh, cool, next week is 20, and then there was, like, a month gap, and I was like, of all seasons, because, like, season 11's weird, but Peacock did the documentary about it, You know, it's like, I want someone to address this weird year where they had Mike Myers, Kevin Nealon, and Ellen Cleghorn, and Farley and Spade. Yeah, Farley, Spade, and Sandler, and it was still weird. So I feel like that season is another one that deserves discussion. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get someone to do a Sandler impression. Shimmer, shimmer, woo! What? Anyway, but yeah, season 20 was another one.
If only we had been allowed into the production meetings early on.
Yes.
You know?
That would have been it.
I feel like we should.
I just want to say one more thing about the movie that a lot of podcasts have talked about. It's not exact. I mean, if you want exact history, they exaggerate a lot for drama. Like Joe said, it's a movie. So there's a lot of things. Like, I know, Brad, I know I keep talking about other podcasts. I think that's a good thing. I like how supportive we all are. But on the Not Ready for Primetime podcast, they did an episode or project now. They did an episode about the movie. And Brad did say that, you know, this isn't for accuracy. This is for entertainment. And he's such a Belushi nut. Like, I don't think I've heard a bigger Belushi fan than Brad Robinson. And he's like, they made him look like such a grouch. And he wasn't that big a grouch at the beginning. The grouchiness came along later. And like, it wasn't all about the drugs. So he was a little disappointed in that. So right. Just, you know, take it with a grain of salt. This is not perfect history. Mm-hmm. It's entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you catch any of the Easter eggs at all?
I did.
In the theater, I did.
The only one I saw was Franken and Davis at one point are sitting at their desk and they're eating, uh-huh, and there's a box of colon blow beside.
Yes.
I missed that. I missed it.
That's it. That's the one I caught. It goes by real because the camera pans by it, you know, and it's, and there's a lamp in front. Because how about this? Not to show off, but I've seen the season a couple times. I saw, you know, and there's a lamp in front of it, and I thought I imagined it. I thought they're like, oh, that's just post cereal. They had to put a lamp in front of it because of product placement and stuff like this. But then, no, second time, I'm like, it is, you know. So I was like, looking for Easter eggs that were from the, let's say, future or from later seasons. Like, was there going to be a Roxbury mention or, you know, some public access mention? But, I mean, that's the key Easter egg that I saw. So maybe there's more.
Yeah, if you saw one, send us an email at snlhofwc@gmail.com. We want to hear from you this season. If you shoot us an email, we'll read it on the podcast and we'll let you know what we think of your question. So please reach out. That's it for us for this week. We will see you next week when we have SNL superfan and SNN correspondent Andrew Haynes joining us to nominate the one and only Kevin Nealon. Guys, I'm really excited about this one. So goodbye from the gang. And as always, stay thirsty. Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame Water Cooler. To connect with Joe and Shari, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/SNLHOF. To email the cast, write to snlhofwc@gmail.com. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Podcasts and such.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week.
Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.